dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the War of Ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has had a ringside seat in some of the latest phases of that war is our guest, I'm very pleased to say, for this full hour. His name is Bill Koenig. He is the driving force behind an internet wire service, if I can call it that, called World Watch Daily. You can find it at watch.org. He is the author of several important books of very considerable relevance to what we're going to be talking with him about today. He co-authored with John McTiernan, Israel, The Blessing or the Curse. He also wrote Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel. And in 2016, he authored Revealed, Obama's Legacy. He is a good friend, a man that I've admired much over the years and appreciate tremendously his very clear-eyed reporting from the White House. And it's just a treat to be able to spend some significant time with him talking about the developments of the day, which could hardly be more relevant to both his current portfolio as well as his focus of interest over many, many years. Bill Koenig, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. So good to have you, and thank you for giving so generously of your time today.
Thank you, Frank. Great to be with you.
Well, where to begin? I guess I'd like to sort of level set, if I can, with you, Bill, in this opening segment about Israel. You've been there many times, obviously, with presidents, without presidents. You've covered very carefully, as I say, the history of the land and its people and efforts to, well, forge a peace with some of its enemies. And I guess I just ask you, whether it's from the biblical perspective or the perspective of the man who covers the White House, just give us sort of a sense of what's Israel about and why does it matter so much?
Well, Israel is, as my pastor down in Dallas used to always say, Israel is God's time clock. Even greater than that, Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, is God's time clock. If you want to know where things stand biblically and prophetically in terms of the times we live in, watch what's happening with that tiny little nation called Israel. Fortunately, when I was before I moved to Washington 18 years ago, I was in Dallas. I was real involved with Dallas Theological Seminary's President's Council. We had some of the world's great prophecy teachers, Dr. Wolvert, Pentecost, and others, and I just developed this incredible interest as a Christian, as a born-again Christian, with this country called Israel and the biblical significance of this nation. I mean, here we have a country the size of New Jersey that continues to be the focus of the world, and we have not had a major world leader in the last 30, 40 years that have not had a position on dealing with Israel, are speaking to the world about Israel, are addressing their opinion about what Israel should do with this land that they have. And this is all aligning, Frank, to prophetically what the Bible speaks of in the final days.
Well, I did want to talk to you about that. The end times are clearly one of the contexts in which many of these issues can be discussed, and we will in the course of this hour. But before we get there, it seemed to me, Bill, that the context for America with Israel, going back over 200 years now, for the founders, the framers, if you will, of our republic, was very much imbued with insights about Israel and the Jews and Judaism and sort of the important connection between Judaism and Christianity that is, you know, very much Old Testament stuff, not Revelations. Give us just a flavor of that and how, when you look back on America's, you know, trajectory, the time clock, if you will, as you put it, has been a very important part, even before there was a modern state of Israel, for the United States.
The United States, you know, even back to our founding fathers, even all the way back to Christopher Columbus, some of people believe that he was a Jewish believer, that some of the gold that was taken was used to bring him to the New World, which is very interesting, far out, many hundred years ago. But also when you look at the relationship that Christians and Jews have had with this country, one of the Jewish scholars said, you know, America has been so blessed by Christian ingenuity in Christian inventions. Many of the great inventions in America were developed by Christians. And also the Jewish role in this amazing country through finance.
Just hold on a second, Bill. Did you mean were developed by Jews, or did you mean developed by Christians?
No, Christians and Jews. I mean, this is a rabbi that said that, you know, Bill, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but many of the great inventions in America were established by Christians. And then again, our faith, the Jewish faith, as well, has developed many inventions, creations, very active in finance. So what I'm saying here is God's blessing over the Jews and Christians, Frank, is why America became the great nation that we have become. And it is extraordinary, that relationship. And, you know, I like to point to Genesis 12:3, and this is God's intent, was those who bless the Jewish people and their offspring, they will be blessed. Those who do not will be cursed. And America has been blessed because this relationship that we have had with the state of Israel, our American presidents have had a very significant biblical role in the development of the state of Israel, as well as being a defender of the state of Israel. And then also as a Christian, we look at the Abrahamic covenant of Genesis 15:16-17, and the biblical significance of the land of Israel that the God of Israel gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants to enjoy and to occupy. So that's, you know, just throwing it all into the mix, Frank, is the biblical significance of the Jewish people, the biblical significance, obviously, of the Christians because of Jesus Christ, our Savior, and also the biblical significance of the days that we're living in that were spoken of by the Jewish prophets in the Scriptures.
And Bill, just before we leave all this, we have to take a break here in a moment, but you mentioned those who bless the Jews will be blessed. Did Genesis not specifically speak as well about those who bless Israel will be blessed?
Yes, exactly. It starts with the Abrahamic covenant. Genesis 12:3, prior to the Abrahamic covenant, speaks of those who bless Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their descendants, which is the modern state of Israel, will also be blessed.
Got it. Bill Koenig is our guest. We will be talking with him next about how, in addition to this shared tradition, culture, civilization between the Jews and the Christians of the United States from this country's founding, I mean, literally the founding of, well, a colonies, really, I think not just the nation of the United States of America, but we'll talk about shared interests as well, shared values, shared interests, and why in this time those are the ties that must bind. That and much more with Bill Koenig right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined for this full hour, a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio, by Bill Koenig. He is the White House correspondent for World Watch Daily. He can be found at watch.org, a terrific little website. And he's also the author of several very important books that could hardly be more topical in light of very recent and in fact, still unfolding events, which we will be discussing with him in a moment. But before we do, I want to just sort of complete this sort of context with you, Bill, if I can. You set the stage nicely in terms of the biblical and cultural and historical relationship between the people of the United States and our country and the people of Israel, the Jews. I did want to ask you, in addition, about two other aspects of this relationship, shared values and shared interests between the United States and the modern state of Israel. Talk us through those, if you would.
Well, the shared values would be our Judeo-Christian values. And, you know, that's what helped form the Constitution that we live under. It has been a blessing. Judeo-Christian values have been the foundation and the rock that we have been on in America for hundreds of years. And unfortunately, that's been under attack over the last few years. But that Judeo-Christian values, the principles that developed and created this wonderful nation, this great nation.
These are sometimes derided as obsolete or ancient, but they're traditional, to be sure. But why are they relevant to our present time, would you say?
Well, they're relevant because it's a truth. We have the Ten Commandments. We also have biblical principles in the Old Testament, the New Testament, that are true and as relevant today as ever. And if you follow those biblical principles and live a biblical life, then the fruit will be there for people to see. And that's the thing is, unfortunately, in a country that's moving away from those principles, and this form of truth is whatever you want to believe is the truth, is crazy, it's ridiculous, and it's leading us in the wrong direction.
Yeah, very much so. You know, I do have to just insert, it's a little off topic, but when you're talking about the Ten Commandments, a particularly egregious example of getting away from them can be found in communist China at the moment, where the Chinese government, which is controlling brutally, in many cases, people of faith, especially Christians, they've got it down to 9 commandments, as I understand it. That first one didn't quite fit with the Communist Party's idea that it is God, really, not God. But Bill, just to pick up on the second part of my question, talk a little bit about, and again, you've seen this firsthand at work in your coverage of presidents from George W. Bush on to the present at the White House, on travel with them. What are the shared strategic interests and the ties that bind on that level that operate as well, if you would, between the United States and Israel?
Well, it's interesting is because, a true democracy in the Middle East exists in Israel. It's a parliamentary government, and obviously it's a much more challenging government, form of government, because you have to develop coalitions than what we have here in America. But that bind, the Judeo-Christian bind, Harry Truman's role in acknowledging Israel as a state, despite all the people in his administration that said, no, that's going to be a huge mistake. Whether it's LBJ's very close relationship with the Jewish people and help at the time of the Six-Day War, Richard Nixon's mother believing that her son one day would have an opportunity to be there for the state of Israel. And when he and Alexander Haig sent 2-3 times what Israel requested, despite what Henry Kissinger was saying, is teach these Jews a lesson. That was critical to Israel's success in the Yom Kippur War. George Herbert Walker Bush beginning the peace process. I would say he's a friend of Israel, but he started the peace process dividing the Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. But, also you look at, Bill Clinton and then George W. Bush as a evangelical believer. He had a heart for Israel, Obama's faith. We can go into that later. And obviously, President Trump has surrounded himself with a lot of evangelicals that understand the biblical significance of the state of Israel. So what's interesting, Frank, is modern-day Israel, the American presidents have had a very significant role of being a friend of Israel, providing finance to that incredible state that's developed into a dynamic economic power, to President Trump. It's just been a remarkable thing to follow, and that's been part of the blessing of America.
It has indeed. Yeah, and I don't think there's any doubt about it. And we'll talk more about several of the things that you just touched on, Bill. But just one other thing that it does seem to me we share, and it's important to keep this firmly in mind, and that is shared enemies to a very considerable degree, not perhaps in every case, but to a very considerable degree. Israel is considered basically the speed bump for powers hostile to us to get at us. And that to the extent that we can strengthen Israel, we can support it in being a bulwark against those enemies. And I'm thinking most especially at the moment of Iran, of course. This is an important piece of America's security interests, not simply Israel. So when you hear people talking about, well, divided loyalties and the idea that, you know, we're slavishly doing whatever Israel wants or throwing money at it in ways that are inappropriate because of the Benjamins or the Jews or their influence or what have you, Bill Koenig, at the end of the day, that is, it seems to me, strategic ignorance, among other things, probably in most cases anti-Semitism to boot, but at least ignoring realities that are very important to our security interests as well as those of Israel.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, when you think about it, I think when you look at U.S. History in the Middle East, one of our greatest concerns is making sure that that oil will continue to go through the Persian Gulf and be brought out of other countries in the Middle East to ensure that the economies of the world have what they need. And, 25 to 26% of the daily oil travels through that Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz, onto the nations of the world. And that is crucial.
And by the way, it's important to note, that's not us anymore. That's basically just our allies and others whose interests we are helping to protect by ensuring that flow of oil, right?
Yeah, fortunately, we're down about a million two barrels a day from Saudi Arabia, but we can, with what's happening in West Texas, North Dakota, Wyoming, New Mexico, I think by the end of this year, if not early next year, we'll be able to handle that, cover that as well, if not get that from Canada or Mexico. So, Frank, I mean, when it comes to the United States right now, our level of vulnerability is minimal, thankfully, for this oil and gas boom here in the States. But, look what happened in July of 2008 when oil hit $147 a barrel. I mean, it crippled our automobile companies, it crippled our economy, it crippled economies of the world, and it sent ripples through the world economies. So that oil and gas, especially the oil, is critical coming out of the Middle East, and that's been the greatest level of interest, whether it's the U.S. government, whether it's the international governments, whether UN, EU, or Russia, but especially the UN, the EU, and the United States, is that oil, the importance of that oil. So that was a huge dynamic.
But that's been true for quite some time, but particularly of late, as the Iranian regime, which can, let's face it, control the Strait of Hormuz at their will, has been representing a much more serious, even perhaps existential threat to both Israel and the United States, with its growing capacity to acquire nuclear weaponry, if it hasn't already, and the missile technologies and means by which to deliver such weapons over increasingly long distances. Just tell us a little bit about that piece of the shared strategic interests, Bill.
Well, that's the benefit, Frank, of the administration we have, because previous administrations knew about this. They kind of looked over it, or with the Obama administration, they tried to make peace with these guys in Iran. But the bottom line is we have had the Trump administration, whether it's him, Vice President Pence, Mike Pompeo, Mattis when he was at the Pentagon, and some of the generals at the Pentagon, and Nikki Haley at the UN. I mean, these are clear-eyed people that fully understand Iran, the risk that Iran is to Israel, the United States' interest in the Middle East, as well as to the Sunni Arab so-called allies in the Middle East, as well as to the international community. I mean, this administration sees this risk for what it is, and they're going to continue to put the pressure on them. It's going to be an incredibly interesting dynamic and incredibly interesting play here, Frank, how Iran responds to it. I mean, here's something a good friend of yours, Claire Lopez, said a few years ago when I spoke to her on the sidelines of the UN. She says, it's not by chance that the Chinese, the Persians, and the Jews have survived the century. because they're that bright. They're that brilliant. So when we're talking about taking on Iran, these are strategic chess players. So this is a very...
Invented the game.
Exactly. Exactly. They are so savvy. So that's why it's going to be interesting. I'm thankful that this administration sees it for what it is. At the same time, we're dealing with a very formidable foe, the United States and Israel, and dealing with the Persians there in Iran.
Bill Koenig, we're going to have to pause here for a moment. I just wanted to say that you mentioned the role that Barack Obama has played. We're going to talk briefly about his legacy, specifically with respect to Iran, and the degree to which it came at the expense of America's strategic interests, most especially its strategic interest in the survival and well-being of the state of Israel, the Jewish state. We'll be right back with Bill Koenig right after this.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We are spending this full hour talking with a man who has been, well, at the heart of some of the most interesting developments in memory. That is to say, the challenges that have faced this country from what I think of as Sharia supremacists bent on the destruction of our country, whether they're of the Sunni stripe, like those who attacked us on 9/11 shortly after Bill Koenig became the White House correspondent for World Watch Daily, or the Shia of Iran, most notably, who are making no secret, it seems, of their ambition to actually execute their long and often stated goal of bringing death, not just to Israel, but to America as well. And Bill, I wanted to talk in this context briefly about some of your insights into the Obama legacy, the subject of your 2016 book. Give us just a quick sense of what Obama did in the Middle East that was inimical to our strategic interests as well as those of Israel.
Well, typically, U.S. administrations have had a relationship with the Sunni Arabs out of, you know, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, and then good relationships with Jordan and also Egypt. And the number one is Obama sided with the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, and really in a lot of ways Egyptians will say to this day that he threw Hosni Mubarak under the bus, and that allowed the Muslim Brotherhood to take power there.
Well, that's not even a matter of debate, is it? That's a matter of record. I know we haven't had an opportunity to see, Bill, and I don't know if you have any insights into this, but I know people who have read Presidential Study Directive 11, which President Obama signed off on just before the so-called Arab Spring, which very explicitly aligned the United States with the Muslim Brotherhood and helping them come to power, displacing not only Hosni Mubarak, but friends of ours, such as they are in the Middle East, elsewhere in that part of the world.
Well, that's a great point, Frank, and probably very few people understand it as well as you do. That is very spot on, and you understood that. I mean, that was enormous. It was significant and also empowered what was taking place in Jordan. There was a lot of concern that the Jordanian king would not be able to withstand the Muslim Brotherhood efforts that were taking place in his country. And so that was one component of it.
Not least because he's got them in his government. That's kind of a problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was a very distinctive problem. And the other thing, too, is the United States typically had been very friendly with the Sunni Arab countries. But what was happening in the Arab countries, and I think Dick Cheney said it best. I don't always agree with everything Dick Cheney says, but this was an excellent point he made, was that our enemies don't fear us. And our allies don't trust us. This was what he was talking about, the Obama administration.
Yeah, that's the legacy for sure, as was enriching the Iranians.
Absolutely, which led to this Iranian nuclear deal, which was an effort by Barack Obama and John Kerry to develop some kind of legacy for all their effort in the Middle East. And this was their effort, and obviously a bad plan. you know, he had many opportunities to help and stand with the people of Iran, and he didn't. He worked with the Ayatollah and all those folks. So
think how different things might have been if he had stood with the Green Revolution and even just endorsed it. It might be a whole different Middle East at the moment. But that brings us to Donald Trump and the legacy he has been building, standing in very stark contrast to that of Barack Obama. Talk first, if you would, Bill, about the significance of his decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, not just in terms of, you know, where it would be and the connection to the capital, as it should be in any country, but the strategic context and insights that flowed from that decision.
You know, the moving of the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem was enormous, Frank. I mean, this is so significant. We'd had previous presidents, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, promising to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They never did. You know, when President Trump was considering this, people at the State Department, 85-90% of the people at the State Department says the whole area will catch fire, the Middle East will catch fire. John Kerry bashed it publicly. The EU officials, Russia, I mean, the whole world basically said that this would be an enormous mistake by moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And President Trump went ahead and did it, fulfilled his campaign promise, and all that they said would happen did not happen in terms of war, violence, et cetera, et cetera. So this was a very significant decision in his behalf.
Yeah. And so was the decision that followed to honor another campaign pledge. And I couldn't be more proud of him for all of these, but specifically this one, because, as you say, all of the smart people were quite confident and insistent that if he withdrew the United States from the Iran deal, that would, you know, trigger a nuclear war, or at the very least assure that all of the other countries on the planet would be aligned against us and working with the Iranians. Talk about what's actually happening in the wake of that decision, Bill Koenig.
Well, I think it's a bold move. It was a right move, Frank, as you said. And I think that, you know, we see this danger for what it is. I mean, come on. I mean, that first of all, the deal is a bad deal. It was going to give Iran the opportunity to become a nuclear power at the end of the agreement anyhow. You can't trust them. Fortunately, Israel's Mossad was able to get in and find out all this information. It said that Iran was developing a nuclear program. And the fact that President Trump, call it what it is, was fantastic, taking this on, calling it for all the flaws that this agreement had, plus the fact that Iran is continuing to develop missile technology that puts every Middle Eastern country at risk, including Israel, eventually every European country at risk, and eventually the United States at risk. And you know, the European Union wants to stand with this bad agreement, Russia and China as well, because they do a lot of business with Iran. But it's really President Trump's courage, along with his very capable staff, that fully understand that Iran is the number one threat to the Middle East, if not the world.
Yeah. And speaking of his staff, I do want to do a special shout out to two individuals who were instrumental, clearly, in this decision. John Bolton, his national security advisor, who had championed getting out from under this agreement and opposed it in the first instance, of course, but worked very hard to give President Trump the option to withdraw. And of course, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, who was of a similar character in mind. That brings us to the last, or not necessarily the last, but the most recent of the examples of Donald Trump's contrasting approach to Israel from that of President Obama, namely his decision just this past week to recognize that Israel is sovereign over the Golan Heights. Tell us why that's so important, Bill Koenig, and why, again, this is a manifestation of a very different attitude towards Israel and its security than we've seen in the past, but not just by President Obama, but by previous presidents as well.
Strategically, the Golan Heights is about as important to Israel as any part of Israel. Samaria, maybe the mountains of Samaria as well. But this Golan Heights, right there in the border of Syria, is so strategic, so relevant to Israel's future existence. The fact that there's also about 140,000 to 150,000 rockets that have been put in place, deployed there on Israel's border that Hezbollah controls. So this is a very strategic, important piece of land to the future of Israel. And thank God for Mike Pompeo and John Bolton, two excellent people, friends of Israel, that fully understands the biblical right that Israel has to this land, and then the modern-day importance from a defense standpoint of Israel continuing to control this property.
Well, I keep thinking, and we had a small role, I think, in helping keep this land in Israel's control. Back in 1994, Bill, as you may remember, the Center for Security Policy issued a study, blue ribbon study, by some very eminent national security practitioners, including six four-star generals and admirals, inveighing against the idea that was then being brooded by President Clinton and then Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin to give the Golan to Syria and put American troops on that high ground instead of Israeli troops to try to maintain the peace. One can only imagine what would be the case today with Syrian and Iranian forces in close proximity to the Golan if Israel were not on that high ground. I think there would have been a war by now. But anyway, we have to pause. And I did want to just say Bill Koenig is our guest, and an extraordinarily important topic of his work over the years. In fact, the subject of his 2004 book is going to be the subject of our next segment, our final concluding one with him. What it would mean if the United States under Donald Trump now, having made this great record, were to insist on dividing the land of Israel. That and much more with Bill Koenig right after this.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back for the final installment of this extraordinarily timely and important conversation with Bill Koenig, the director of World Watch Daily. He reports for it from the vantage point of a White House correspondent, as he has been since 2001. He is also the author of several important books, and we're going to talk in this segment specifically about one that he wrote in 2004 and updated in 2017, entitled Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel. So, Bill Koenig, we've been talking, I think, very, very helpfully about why the United States has both a moral and strategic interest, historical and present, in the well-being of the Jewish people and their state of Israel. And we've been talking about the legacy of Barack Obama, which, among other presidents, did take steps that endangered Israel. In the peace process that you mentioned, George Herbert Walker Bush initiated and then was pursued aggressively by Bill Clinton and to varying degrees George W. Bush, and then, of course, Barack Obama and his Secretary of State, John Kerry. We are now at a point where the Trump administration, in the person of Jared Kushner, the president's son-in-law specifically, is said to be pressing forward with and shortly to unveil a peace plan that the president has said will be the deal of the century. Tell us what we know at the moment, what you're hearing perhaps in the way of scuttlebutt in the White House corridors about the Jared Kushner plan and what it would entail for the state of Israel.
Jared Kushner and his associate Jason Greenblatt have put a tremendous amount of time into a plan that would normalize relations between Israel and Sunni Arab countries in the Middle East. That would be the Saudi Arabians, that would be Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Qatar, possibly part of that, Kuwait, I think I mentioned. But the main thing here, Frank, is to develop a situation where Israel has a working and cooperative relationship with these Sunni Arab countries. And for that to be done, certain parts of the land of Israel would have to be given up in this so-called deal of the century.
And those parts specifically would be in the area that is these days popularly known as the West Bank of the Jordan River, but historically as Judea and Samaria, very much part of the Jewish people's homeland. What are the characteristics of that area, in addition to having quite a number of Palestinian Arabs on it? The tourists who visit it, I think, are impressed by something that our friend Mark Langfan has taught many of us in this country about, namely the high ground, specifically the Samarian Mountains. What's the significance of who controls that high ground for specifically the prospects for peace and the security of the Jewish state?
The mountains of Samaria, along with the Golan Heights, Frank, that we just mentioned, is very tall, very strategically important for Israel. If Israel's enemies control that land and put missiles on the top of those mountaintops, every city in Israel would be at risk. If they're not already, from the missiles and rockets of Hezbollah in Syria.
Syria and Lebanon, too, of course.
Absolutely, because it's so close. This land is so close to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Haifa, and Israel cannot afford to give up this land from a strategic standpoint.
Yeah. It also serves as a physical barrier against invasion from the states of like Jordan. And there's one other piece of this that Mark Langfan, again, has taught me about, and that is the importance of that high ground on the West Bank for literally the survival of the state of Israel in terms of the vast majority of its water. The aquifers of the West Bank, of course, also of the Golan, are critically important, even though Israel has augmented them with some extraordinary developments in desalinization. But how does that play into, again, the security of the state of Israel in terms of who controls those mountains, Bill Koenig?
Well, the enemies of Israel would use that as well, Frank. I mean, the water, there's nothing more important than having our daily water. And that would be another tool that they would use to bring Israel to its knees and eventually their ultimate plan, which is to completely take over the entire state of Israel, which will never happen biblically. But it doesn't mean that this isn't part of their overall comprehensive plan.
No, in fact, as they very often say, you know, to make the land essentially Judenrein, that is to say, free of Jews from the river, that would be the Jordan River, to the sea, which would be, of course, the Mediterranean. So the question occurs, Bill, and if you could just very quickly give us a short course on the history of what has happened when U.S. governments have sought to divide the land of Israel, to force the Israelis to relinquish parts of it to their enemies, as I say, their enemies and ours.
Well, what's interesting, Frank, in my book, I have one chapter on American presidents and their relationship with Israel, all the way back to FDR, who promised the Saudi king that if Israel ever wanted to become a state, he would let him know. Yeah, 7 days later, he died in office, replaced by Harry Truman, who made sure Israel became a state. John Kennedy did not want Israel to go nuclear. He put a lot of pressure on him. Tragically, he was assassinated in Texas, replaced by Lyndon Johnson, who was a president, up until Trump, arguably was probably one of the best friends Israel ever had a key role in the Six-Day War, moving ship around in the Mediterranean to keep Russia at bay, and other weaponry that was critical. And I can take it all the way out, but and I do in the book, of those who blessed, the presidents that blessed Israel were blessed, and those who did not were cursed. And then it gets back to the land.
And when you say cursed, I mean, you were able to make correlations. And some will just say, well, those are just happenstance. But there is a pretty impressive pattern to what you have described in your book, Eye to Eye, Facing the Consequences of Dividing Israel, Bill. And when you lay this out, whether it's earthquakes or hurricanes or political setbacks for these presidents, what have you, it ought to be a cautionary note, it would seem, for sure, quite apart from our strategic interests, quite apart from our shared values, quite apart from our shared enemies, for President Trump to go forward with a plan that would compel Israel to relinquish parts of the land without which the state of Israel cannot exist to the Palestinians.
Well, absolutely, and if you read the chapter on the presidents in the book, you'll see it. It's so specifically obvious of the presidents that blessed Israel were incredibly blessed, and those that did not were cursed, unfortunately, because they didn't stand up for the land of Israel. God gave the land of Israel to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and their descendants for their right to that land. No earthly leader has the right to determine the boundaries of the state of Israel. And I'll also document 128 catastrophic, record-setting U.S. events that happened at the time the United States presidents were applying pressure on Israel to divide their covenant land. Despite being a friend, the land of Israel, Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem are not to be given up for an Arab state. And every time they got involved in the peace process actively, major catastrophic events happened in America. The perfect storm, the 9/11 terror events, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Harvey, and 126 other events.
Wow. Let me ask you, Bill, in closing, because we're almost out of time. There are reports that the president has been meeting with Jewish and Christian leaders about Jared's plan. I'm told that he has been put on notice that he will likely lose the support of evangelicals and perhaps some in the Jewish community as well if he persists in doing what has shown itself to be a very bad idea. If that's so, and if the consequences of that action would then be for him to be denied re-election, do you think this will cause him to rethink this so-called deal of the century and prayerfully, I say, pull back from it?
Well, what has happened, Frank, is most of the Jewish leaders that he has spoken to, Kushner specifically and Jason Greenblatt, because they've basically been, for the last year, or a little over a year, have been giving the plan or the parameters, the parameters of the plan to Jewish and Christian leaders. And most of the Jewish leaders went right along with the plan. If we have to give up land, that's fine. And I'd say a major majority of the Christian leaders have not said anything about giving up the land either. There's only been a couple that have said there's consequences if you give up the land.
Bill Koenig, we have to leave it at that for the moment. Thank you for the great work that you do at World Watch Daily. We'll talk with you again soon. We'll talk with the rest of you, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.